3, chapter 15, text 14. Pitam Shuke Pritu Nitam Bini Vishpurantya.
Pitam Shuke Pritu Nitam Bini Vishpurantya.
Kancha Levi Viltaya Vanamalaya Cham.
Kancha Levi Viltaya Vanamalaya Cham.
Palgu Prakosta Valayam Vinata Sutam Se. Vinyasta hastam hitarena jinanam abjam. Pitam shuke pritu nitam bini vispuran. Jinanam, being twirled. Abjam, a lotus flower. Translation. He was adorned with a girdle that shone brightly on the yellow cloth covering his large hips. And he wore a garland of fresh flowers, which was distinguished by humming bees. His lovely wrists were graced with bracelets, and he rested one of his hands on the shoulder of Garuda, his carrier, and twirled a lotus with another hand, responsibly. He was adorned with a girdle that shone brightly on the yellow cloth covering his large hips. And he wore a garland of fresh flowers, which was distinguished by humming bees. His loving wrists were graced with bracelets, and he rested one of his hands on the shoulder of Garuda, his carrier, and twirled a lotus with another hand. Here is a full description of the personality of Godhead as personally experienced by the sages. The Lord's personal body was covered with yellow robes, and his waist was thin. In Vaikuntha, whenever there is a flower garland on the chest of the personality of Godhead or any one of his associates, it is described that the humming bees are there. All these features were very beautiful and attractive for the devotees. One of the Lord's hands rested on his carrier Garuda, and in another hand he twirled a lotus flower. These are personal characteristics of the personality of Godhead, Narayan. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Jnanjana Shalakaya Chakshumunitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swamipakadamayam Dadatu Saparantikam Mukham karoti vachalam pangung langaite girinya kripata maham vandeshi girindu tarinam. Jai Shri Krishna Jaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shwarvita Giradha Shiva Sari Gaur Bhaktavinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. We'll continue with the description of how the four Kumaras came to see Lord Narayan. So not the four Kumaras. How Jaya and Vijaya are becoming cursed, or have become cursed, by the gatekeepers of Vaikuntha on account of so-called anger they showed towards the four Kumaras as they were traveling into Vaikuntha. So we're hearing about the description of the Supreme Lord Narayan right after the doorman or Jain Vijaya had become cursed by the sages. So descriptions about the Supreme Lord, even in his Narayan aspect, are on the transcendental platform. Although we understand that the original form, is Swayam Rupa, or Swayam Bhagavan is Krishna in his Shyamasundara form. As Arjuna had indicated, after Krishna had shown him his Virat Rupa, his universal form, Arjuna requested the Lord to go back to his original form, not only to his Vishnu form that he also saw, but he wanted to see Krishna's Shyamasundara form. And in those purports, in that section, Srila Prabhupada mentions how the most attractive form, and particularly the most attractive form to the pure devotees, the Lord in his two-handed form, is Shyamasundara. Nevertheless, even the description of the Lord in his Narayan feature is something that can and does attract the eyes and attract the hearts of those who have become purified. So even the four Kumaras who were deemed as impersonalists became attracted by the physical form of the Lord in his Narayan feature. So the description of the bodily form of the Lord in this case, which is different from matter, Krishna's forms, all the Vishnu Tattvas, are always, eternally, on spiritual platform. It is not that their form has come into being. Their form does not go through these six bodily changes that material forms go through. But their forms are eternally existing. The Vishnu forms are eternally existing. And Lord Narayan is eternally existing. So their forms, as they are being explained here, are meant to purify the vision of the seer and the emote, and they're also meant to give bliss and satisfaction. So the Kumaras, as we know, they were attracted to the impersonal feature of Brahman. But of course, upon seeing the form of the Lord and even different aspects of the form of the Lord, whether it's the ornaments on the Lord's body, the girdle around the Lord's waist, or the crown, the Lord is wearing the flower garlands around the Lord's neck, the tulsi leaves that are placed on the feet of the Lord, all these attributes of the personal form of the Lord became very, very attractive. And not only are they attractive to elevated souls like the Kumaras, the sons of Brahma, or even the great sages headed by Shonakarishi, they're also attractive to your conditioned souls who are hearing about these descriptions. So the beauty of the Lord is enchanting, and it is that beauty that is able to persuade one or push one to hearing and understanding more about the transcendental feature or aspect of the Bhagavan form of the Lord. So there are three levels of trying to realize the absolute truth, as we know, the Paramatma feature and the Brahman feature. And in those two aspects, individually, of course, they cannot give full realization of the absolute truth. They're only partial representations of that supreme absolute person, whereas the Bhagavan aspect gives us a full picture or a full understanding of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this understanding is always by far superior to the impersonal understanding or to the Paramatma understanding. So understanding the Lord's form as being transcendental, as he says in Bhagavad Gita, Janma Kama Chimaya Divyam, one who understands the nature of his birth and his activities does not come and take birth again in this material world. So the nature of the Lord's form being nirguna, which means it's the form of the Lord is never on the material platform. It is above the modes of material nature. And consequentially, his activities will also be above the understanding or beyond material understanding. So it requires bhakti to actually comprehend the transcendental form and the activities of the Lord. So in the also in different texts, in different bhakti shastras, whether it's in the Bhagavad Gita or an act of devotion, Srimad Bhagavatam, even in books like Brihad Bhagavatamrita, these descriptions of the Lord's transcendental form and how that form is very attractive even to those who have attained the limited scope of Brahman happiness, they also become attracted to the form of the Lord. So there's a part in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita which I've been reading that explains how Gopal Kumar, who was attracted to, of course, Lord Gopal within his heart, was traveling through the universe, and there's a point where he reaches Brahmaloka, and because he had such an attraction to be close with the Lord and to have a special intimate relationship with the Lord, he could see that in the relationship between Brahma, who is the secondary creator, and the Lord, and he was aspiring for that position. So as the Lord saw this desire in Gopal Kumar's heart, he arranged a situation so that Lord Brahma leaves his post temporarily and he goes in hiding as he was being attacked by a demon. So Lord Brahma goes in hiding and he does not come out for some time. And in the meanwhile, Gopal Kumar gets given the post of becoming Lord Brahma. And in that situation, he gets to understand or he gets to learn more about the attributes of the Lord, about the personality of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In jest. So, like that, the Lord reciprocating with the desire of Gopal Kumar to actually dive more and understand the attractive nature of the Lord. So even up to the topmost devotee, there is a natural inclination and attraction to learn more about the form, qualities and pastimes of the Lord. It is not only for us who are in the conditioned platform who need to hear this, but also on the elevated spiritual platform, devotees are also, the pure devotees are also very much still attracted to hearing about the form and the nature of the Lord. And Vaikuntha, of course, the Lord, that is the Lord's residence, and he's always being served by the goddesses of fortune and other pure devotees. The Brahman concept or the attraction to the Brahman effulgence is something that gives very much limited happiness in comparison to the unlimited happiness that one gains by connecting with the Lord through the process of bhakti. So to get to connect with the Lord through the process of bhakti requires one to be free from the modes of karma and jnana. So even having an independent inclination to be well-versed and well-learned in terms of jnana and to perform karmic activities that also have been recommended in different Puranas. This is not the highest platform. The highest platform is performing pure devotional service, pure bhakti. And that is what gives real liberation. That is what will connect the living entities with their source. The Brahman realization really does not connect the living entity to its source permanently. It is only a temporary manifestation of limited happiness, so-called happiness, in which, in comparison to bhakti, has no bearing to some degree. So the very fact that we're hearing about the description of God and how the two gatekeepers have become cursed by the sages, the four Kumaras, is meant to give us an understanding of the nature of the Supreme Lord and his reciprocation with his devotees. But we should understand that within the pastimes of the Lord, there are many, many lessons that we're meant to learn. For example, it appears that the four Kumaras, of course, the sons of Brahma, are into the monist philosophy, or they want to become one with the Lord. That may be the external case, but as soon we read that as soon as they smelt the tulsi, the aroma that was coming from the Lord's lotus feet, their minds changed. They were attracted then to something that is higher. So this shows that the transcendental pleasure of so-called becoming one with the Lord is inferior to the pleasure that one derives by becoming a servant of the Lord, becoming a servitor of the lotus feet of the Lord. So that is the proof right there that these so-called impersonalists in the guise of the four Kumaras were fixed in their yoga practice, so to speak. But as soon as they smelt the tulsi, or the aroma coming from the Lord's lotus feet, their pleasure or their need to strive to become one with the Lord was quickly diminished, and they wanted to become servitors of the lotus feet of the Lord, which is far better than becoming one with the Lord. So just in this tiny section, we can see the superiority of the process of bhakti over impersonalism, over karma, over jnana. This is something that has to be made clear within our consciousness, that the form of the Lord is powerful in itself to purify all our senses by seeing, by hearing, by tasting, by smelling, by touching. Anything in relation to the Absolute Truth, our spiritual senses become activated, and we lose taste for what is inferior. So Krishna is supreme in every sense. His name, his pastimes, his attributes are superior to any other form, or to speak of any other material form. But also spiritually, the Lord's transcendental body is superior. Krishna is the supreme male, and he's the masculine aspect, and we are Prakriti, we are the feminine nature meant to be enjoyed by the masculine nature. So they can only be one Ishvara, really. We are all pretty much in different bodies meant to be enjoyed by Krishna. So we can do that in a so-called female body, in a male body, but at the end of the day, we are all grouped or categorized as Prakriti. We are feminine because we naturally become enjoyed by the Lord. And that doesn't mean that the living entity has no individuality. It doesn't mean that we are losing our individuality by becoming one with the Lord in terms of our spiritual nature. Just as Prabhupada would give the example of the bird or the parrot flying into the tree, it might take on the nature of the tree in terms of color, it might camouflage with the tree, but it will always remain an individual. Just as the waves in the ocean, they're on the surface, their waves swing to and fro, but the waves never become as strong as the ocean itself. There's a difference between the waves of the ocean and the ocean. So the living entities are one with the Supreme Lord, but at the same time, we are different. We are one in nature, in quality, we are all spirit, but in quantity, we are different. And that will always be the case. It is not that one day we realize we are the Supreme Absolute Truth. We are always the servants of the Supreme Absolute Truth. So even when the living entity has become empowered, like Lord Brahma, to become a secondary creator, or becomes empowered like the sons of Lord Brahma, the great sages, even Kashyapa, who is also one of the sons of Lord Brahma, or empowered incarnations, etc., like Prithu Maharaj or Srila Vyasadeva. We might be living entities who have become empowered, but we are still just the parts and parcels of the Supreme Whole. So the living entity, whether in a conditioned state or in the elevated state, is always a servant of the Supreme Lord. So that should give us at least a feeling of humility, understanding that we are in a subservient position. Not that we are slaves or we are not important in Krishna's eyes. Of course, the living entities have been created by the Supreme Lord to exist in a relationship. So we are parts of Krishna's family, and we exist to engage in transcendental pastimes with the Lord. There's unlimited living entities. So our existence is not, in one sense, our existence is not insignificant. It is significant because we are all eternally connected to the Lord, and we all have a particular relationship with the Lord. And in that way, we're always connecting with the Lord to some degree. And in Krishna consciousness, our connection is based on putting into application the 9 processes of bhakti. So everything from Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Snarnam, up to the process of fully surrendering Atmanivedanam. Surrendering not only in body, mind, but also our words and actions are a sign of surrender, a sign of accepting Krishna as the central or the focal point of our life. So the description of the beauty of the Lord or the body of the Lord is meant to attract our senses and meant to ignite our spiritual senses. So we read, one may ask, what's the big deal hearing about how there's a girdle on the hips of the Lord, how the Lord is standing with one arm on Garuda, and on his wrist he has jewelry adorning him, he has a crown on his head, and he's twirling a lotus flower with his other hand. So one might think, okay, that sounds pretty, what's the big deal? Why should we know the form of the Lord? Why should we know what and how the Lord is using his body? But these descriptions are meant to attract our senses so that our senses become infused and attracted only to the form of the Lord. So there's so many forms out there in the material world that we see and hear about. Many of us used to be attracted to such forms, right? Whether it's on the television set, or I don't even know if they call it that anyway, flat screen TV, our plasma, or music videos, we see different types of forms, people standing in different ways, people moving in different ways. And this used to attract us. That's why we used to watch all these movies with like who? Shilpa Shetty and all these Bollywood ladies and men. I don't know if Shah Rukh Khan still acts, whatever. So all these forms used to be attractive. So for us to get a higher taste, we also need to see and hear about the forms of the Lord so that we become attracted to that instead of becoming attracted to forms that are coming and going. Forms that are so temporary and forms that need to be fixed all the time. The Lord's transcendental body and His form is eternally existing. It does not get wrinkled. It does not need Botox. The Lord's form does not need plastic surgery. It is eternally existing as beautifully as it is being explained here. And by hearing about the Lord's form, within our consciousness, this gets imprinted, it is embedded within our consciousness. So at the time of death, we can actually think about the form of the Lord. We can chant Hare Krishna and we can think about His form. So the gradual elevation of our consciousness is that from chanting the holy name From nama comes the form, then the qualities and the pastimes. So by hearing about Krishna's form, everything from where it's bending, from what is adorning his form, is creating an attraction for a superior form, so that we may lose taste to being attracted to the inferior forms of this material world. So it is rightly so that the Bhagavatam and other Bhakti Shastras are explaining to us forms, tastes, smells and sounds in Vaikuntha, so that we become attracted to that world, become attracted to that reality, and we can lose taste to this temporary reality where the tastes and forms and sounds are so manipulated, they are so concocted and they're so temporary. So in that way, we're hearing this description about the kingdom of God, and it will include all the senses, all the sense perception, all the senses of the Lord, and how his body can be a way to purify the conditioned souls. The Lord is using his body to attract us to him. So in that way, we become enamored by the form, and we derive great satisfaction and bliss in hearing and meditating on that form. So it is not only for the four Kumaras who are very, very advanced themselves are becoming attracted, even just to the lotus feet which are scented with tulsi. So even advanced souls are becoming attracted to that form of the Lord. Even Jai and Vijay, to be gatekeepers, of course, in Vaikuntha, it's not like being a gatekeeper outside Parliament House or the State House or the Parliament House in Canberra. It is a huge post where in Vaikuntha, not any soul gets that benediction or gets the ability to do that service. So even advanced souls are very much attracted to the form of the Lord. So we should also be attracted to the transcendental form of the Lord, so that we want nothing else but to always be attracted to that form. And when the final test comes, of course, hopefully we are meditating on that form and we're not meditating on material forms, material sounds. So that is the point we're hearing here in this text, the description about the characteristics of the Lord, not only from his body but also his nature. So that is what I have to say. And I wanted to spend a few minutes also speaking something about book distribution. Seeing as how it is the month of giving Krishna in the form of his literature. So there's so many stories that we can read about. There's so many instructions Srila Prabhupada has given on book distribution. So book distribution is not so much about, from my understanding, it is not really about becoming the top book distributor, the most known. This can sometimes become create a big false ego. The point of book distribution is to actually give Krishna to others. So whether you do it by distributing Perfection of Yoga or Bhagavad Gita, the point is they have the book. They have a book, and knowledge is something that can revolutionize someone's life. It can help evolve someone's consciousness. So the change has to come from within. We're seeing so many changes externally, but real change has to happen from within. So when persons get books, small, medium books, big books, whatever it might be, that's going to change the course of their life. Pretty much. So we shouldn't despair if we're giving small books
Well, I only distributed a small book. Well, that's, you distributed a book. The main point is that someone is being connected to Krishna. That is the most important thing. And if we look back and see how most of us have stayed in Krishna consciousness, or how some of us came to Krishna consciousness, it was because we got literature, we got a book. So in most people's life, change comes through knowledge. Whether you want to move, relocate to a new city, whether you want to change a career, whether you want to change an entire ideology, this comes through knowledge, this comes through books, whether it's electronic books or hard-bound books. That is why in different phases of history, whether it was a coup or an uprising or whatever it might be, literature played a very central part in changing the minds of people. So in places like, let's say for example, South Africa, where there was an apartheid regime, there were certain books that were allowed to come in the country and leave the country, because they did not want people getting educated to understand that this way of governing people, this way of treating other living entities was wrong. So they controlled the literature, they controlled the knowledge that was coming into the country and the knowledge that was leaving the country. And we also know when we were spreading Krishna consciousness in the communist countries, how book distribution was a central part of attracting people, because people could read and understand that there is another way of life, that there is another alternative. So one book can travel from one continent to the other. So you can get a book, or you can find a book in an airplane. Someone might have gotten a book from LAX or from Telemarine, read it and thought, oh, this is not for me, forgot it on an airplane. Someone picks it up, reads it, and their life may change. The entire karmic arrangement changes because they've accepted this book. There was one such story that I read, that there was a Chinese, or the Chinese? Some tourist had gotten a book, I think they were Chinese. And they liked the book, but at some point it just ended up on a shelf in their home. And one day, as they were leaving, someone else got that book and read it. And they traveled to, I think it was Bhutan, some obscure location. They traveled there, they started reading this book and it inspired them. And they started applying the teachings. They started chanting, they started ordering more books. And there was one sannyasi who wanted to travel to this country, but they had no connection. They didn't have, you know, someone to contact. Where can I stay? You know, all these things that you do when you travel. And they asked for advice at the BBT. Do you have any contact? Are there any books going there? Then they said, actually, there's one person who keeps ordering books. We do not know who it is, but we can give you the contact. So the sannyasi ended up going to this country and started preaching there. All because of this one person who found a book somewhere that someone had left and decided, I'm going to keep ordering books. And because there was that connection, this sannyasi was able to contact that person and start the preaching. So a book can start off in one continent, it can start off on one street, and it can make its way across, you know, the Atlantic onto the other side. So these books are very, very powerful. We might think, I just gave it to one person, what's it going to do? Oh, I only did one book in a day. That used to happen to me a lot. Stay out for 8 hours, distribute one book. And it's very, very testing. You wonder, why am I wasting my time? You think I'm wasting my time. I've been outside for 8 hours, I just gave out one book. And I remember one such day when I was in Melbourne, I was new, I was distributing books, and of course, you know, it gets tough, you depend on Krishna. Krishna is purifying you. And I remember just turning around towards the tram and just screaming, because I was like, I'm so frustrated, I'm trying to connect with people, they like it, but they don't take it. Please, Krishna, just one person, just send me one person I can give this book to. And then I turned around, and I stopped one person, and that person took a book. And at that point, I was like, I'm sorry, Krishna, for doubting you. I'm not out here by myself, but it is up to you to inspire people, because the super soul is in the heart, and the super soul can inspire people to take books. So I was very, very grateful, and I could see and understand that it is Krishna, actually, who is helping, who is distributing the books. And this person has been taking books till now. It's been 8 years. I still see this person. We still have lunch at Gopal's. Because of family situation, this person is not able to take up fully Krishna consciousness. But they've been to many retreats. They come to the temple and they read Prabhupada's books. So in that sense, I could see it was never lost. And one story one of my friends shared with me, that they were distributing books in New Zealand and hadn't distributed a book at all the whole day. And this was a person who could easily distribute 30, 40 Bhagavad Gitas in a day. And only one person took a book that day, and she was very depressed about it. I normally do 40 hardbound books. Today I just did one. And a few years later, she realized the person that she gave that book to has become a devotee. They're a brahmachari, and they're one of the best book distributors. So that one person that she felt so bad and embarrassed about is distributing more books even till now. It's been over 10 years and this person is still doing book distribution as their main service. So it is really, of course, it is wonderful to have nice results, to increase our results for the pleasure of the deities, but we should never think that our efforts are useless even if we distribute one or two books. That one person who takes a book might end up distributing many, many, many more books in the future for the pleasure of Srila Prabhupada. So even if someone comes to our home to fix the sink, try and give them a book. I have a friend, Sevamrita, the other day, she was telling me that there was a man who came to fix her the car, something with the car, and she distributed a book. So it can be easier that you call, someone is coming to fix the light, you have a small book, show them the book, $2 or $3, they can give. So like that, we are always staying in connection with Srila Prabhupada. Because by distributing these books, we're also pleasing Srila Prabhupada and we're associating with Srila Prabhupada. And it's a very, very endearing service. As Krishna says, one who explains this knowledge to others is very, very dear to me. So whether we're giving lectures or we're distributing these books or we're supporting devotees to go out and distribute books, we're becoming dear to Krishna. So in whatever way possible, we can distribute books and please Srila Prabhupada in the parampara in the process. So we can all do something to our capacity. As Prabhupada says, books are the basis of our movement. So the more books we give out, the more people we touch, the more lives we can change for the better. So I'll just read one quote and then we'll end. I'll read one on traveling Sankirtan, because I think some of the men have gone out. This is a letter Srila Prabhupada wrote to Bahudak Das, the 10th of November, 1975. I am glad to know that you are taking out a traveling party. I hope that you have a good success. Just do everything very soberly. You have to do according to the time and circumstances. So you have got my approval and you can go. And as Prabhupada said, his ambition is to spread Krishna consciousness to every corner of the world so that at least 1% of the population becomes Krishna conscious. And that will change the world. So I'll stop there. Hare Krishna, any comment or question? Yes, sir.
Thank you for the nice session. Now that you mentioned about the form of the glory, so it is one another and lotus. Now, when we talk about of our glory is person, someone who is outside or don't know yet, then he will say, yes, like, have you seen? Or like, from where you're talking about this? Because now the mainstream media is so powerful that the lotus temple, it attracts and it makes a lot of sense to them as compared to the things we talk from the scriptures, because it's not something that they see there every day. Like, it's very obscure for them to believe or to think that Krishna is tired of wearing the lotus or
It's very hard for people to. It's very hard for people to accept a deity form. What you speak of Krishna is existing somewhere eternally, as a cowherd boy. I mean, even just this is too much. What you speak of the reality. So when we're connecting with people for the first time, because it is such a different, it's a totally different philosophy and culture altogether. I mean, in India, in one sense, it's kind of easier, and at the same time, it's becoming difficult because everyone sees it as like folklore and like tradition, blah, blah, boring stuff. But initially, when you connect with people, you don't go into so much detail about, you know, Krishna standing in his three bending form, and then he has the gopis surrounding him, and then, you know, we don't go too much to preaching the glories to people who don't have faith yet, and that is one of the offenses to the holy name. So initially, when we connect with people and we want to expose them to Krishna consciousness, what we do is exactly that. We expose them first to the chanting of the holy name, to prasadam, to the association of devotees, and these things build their faith so that by the time they start reading about Krishna, there's already faith in the heart, they accept it. This is actually how it happens. I mean, I accepted the deity. I didn't even know what deities were. I didn't know it. I didn't know what mantras were. I didn't know what deities were. But because for some time I had associated with devotees who would tell me about, you know, having, you know, spiritual vegetarian food, chant, do some meditation, that gave me enough faith, and with that faith, with their association, I was able to actually understand form of the Lord. But initially, there was no way I could understand it, because as a Christian, there's no deity, there's no form of God. Actually, there isn't. So it was very, very obscure. So initially, we're not so much trying to give them, we're not trying to shock them. Just make friends with people, give them your association, give them prasadam, that will purify them. And then gradually, when they get to these points of hearing about Krishna, they are not going to get too bewildered by it. They won't get too bewildered, but the main thing, just build their faith, give them your association,
and gradually introduce and expose them to the process. Because as you said, the way things are going in this world is very, I mean, religion is being scrutinized for everything. There's history of exploitation. There's so many things, and people are very, very fearful. So we have to package Krishna consciousness lifestyle in a way that people are able to digest. Make them feel welcome, make them feel comfortable. Don't hit them on the head with the book. Believe. Take it. There's no way. Krishna never says believes about me. Krishna says this is a process. You try it for yourself. No worries. Yep. Last one. It's like 20 past. Yep. Okay, yeah, when Krishna is explaining his opulences, how do we understand that there's individuality? As in chapter 10, he's talking about how he is the fire of digestion of the Marutsis, this of the Adityas, I am, etc. So, when Krishna explains that those opulences, it's not so much that he has become those persons, but he is the, what's the English word? He is the, I won't say he's the driving force, but he's the, he's the inspiration or the, sorry, there's a term to use for this. He's you know how the super soul is the the super soul is the sanctions, permits and oversees activities. In those opulences, Krishna is the, sorry, I'm really trying to find the right word. He is the creative potency, meaning that potency for any living entity to do anything, it is actually coming from Krishna. The potency of the shark or the potency of the lion and the elephant to be so magnanimous, the potency of the water to be so vast and deep, the potency of the child to be so attractive, that potency, it is coming from Krishna. Because everything lies in Krishna. Even all the contradictions are coming from Krishna. So the ability of any living entity to be majestic, to be best at being renounced or fearsome or ghastly, that is coming from Krishna. So that creative potency, what Krishna talks about in the opulences, that creative potency is coming from Krishna. Because even he says for us, I give you knowledge, remembrance and forgetfulness. I give. That is Krishna saying, I will give you that. Because Krishna has all these qualities in full. We have them in fractions to the degree that we're pure. So when we're ready, Krishna awards us these strengths, these opulences, these potencies. So he's the creative force. He's the creative potency behind everything. So the ability for the Kshatriyas to be as the Parashuram or Prithu Maharaj or whoever it might be, that creative potency, that Shakti, it is Krishna. That's what he means. So anything else afterwards? I've over time, 10 minutes. Thank you very much. Granthraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki. Baba Dida.
Keep this.
No, no, he has to take it. The box. I mean, is there a box?
There is no box.